Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
President Donald Trump says negotiations with North Korea are back on, and the summit that he abruptly canceled yesterday might even take place on June 12th after all. North Korea issued a conciliatory statement last night. Leaving the White House this morning, Trump was asked if he thought North Korea was playing games.
Everybody plays games. You know that.
Well, our Friday roundtable joins us. And joining us today, Telemundo and NBC News anchor Jose Diaz-Balart and Chad Pergram, who covers Congress for Fox News. Welcome to both of you. And I have to say, my first thought when I saw that the thing may be back on is call me when he gets to Singapore. I mean, should we take this seriously at this point after what just happened? I'll start with you, Jose.
I think we I also thought, well, maybe I can then keep the coin because the coin was being returned, you know. But I think we have to take this seriously only because both of them are so unpredictable. Both President Trump and the leader of North Korea are so unpredictable that maybe it's that unpredictability which makes this possible.
Well, Chad, I mean, do you see a bigger grand strategy here through the unpredictability?
Well, that was the thing that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, said when he appeared before a Senate committee yesterday. And this was as this news was breaking. He said, you know, in some respects, it's kind of situation normal. Now, he was referring to the idea that the administration was going to continue to amp up pressure against the regime. You know, he had indicated his word that they were rocking, meaning the administration was getting ready and making preparations for this summit. But in some respects, you know, here you have the Secretary of State in the middle of a hearing when this news comes out and this letter is presented. And then suddenly the questions pivot, you know, to what did you know? Who did you tell? And so on and so forth. That was what was dramatic about this. You know, Gene Shaheen, the Democratic senator from New Hampshire, asked who had been notified. Pompeo said he didn't want to get into this at all. And then the letter itself, you know, Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader, described it, her word, as a valentine that was sent to the leader of North Korea, and said that the Kim Jong-un must be having a giggle fest back in Pyongyang. The idea that her interpretation was that, you know, he had played the president of the United States. I will end on this, though. Remember, there was this failed summit in 1985 in Reykjavik between Mikhail Gorbachev and President Reagan. And what that actually did, they walked away from the table and came back a couple of years later, and things actually worked out better in the long term. Hmm. This could be one of those types of hiccups. Now, granted, they didn't actually get to the summit, but sometimes when you have these hiccups in diplomatic relations, it actually turns out better down the road.
Yeah, and Chad, I think that's a great analogy, and remembering that it was really Reagan that walked away from the table and simply not willing to accept the conditions that he was seeing in Reykjavik. But I've got to tell you, the fact that the president today said that it could even be the 12th is it's surprising. I mean, the letter yesterday that the president sent to the dictator of North Korea was one thing, and today, less than 24 hours later, saying, well, yeah, it could be the 12th. It's just a very interesting, unpredictable time.
So, Chad, I mean, to your Reykjavik analogy, though, I mean, the difference, though, being is that that summit comes at the end of a long series of negotiations where the two heads of state maybe didn't see eye to eye over the terms of the summit. That's all flipped here, right? I mean, we haven't even really started negotiations with North Korea. The summit's coming first, so that diplomatic tradition is on its head. And then back to your other point, to Jose's point about two very unpredictable leaders here. So it just makes me wonder, I mean, how salient that that analogy actually is when you think about the details of who and what we're talking about right now.
No, I think that point is perfect because, you know, you don't know about these personalities. And I bet there's so much to-ing and fro-ing before we actually get to the 12th, or they come back with another date or another location. You just don't know. But, you know, here on Capitol Hill, when this news broke, it was not really shocking to people. You know, someone had made the comment a couple of days ago that this is not like negotiating, you know, a real estate deal in the Upper East Side of Manhattan somewhere. You know, you have to have a little more sophistication. You have to have a little more preparation. Some had indicated that maybe the president wasn't fully prepared. That flies in the face of what Mike Pompeo said to the Senate committee yesterday. But at the end of the day, you are dealing with two volatile personalities who are unpredictable, and anything can happen.
Chad and Magna, I mean, the president didn't deny that he had spoken with the dictator, right? Mm. I mean, that hasn't really been cleared up. They asked him, have you spoken to him? And he didn't want to answer that. Mm. Mm.
I want to ask you about another story, big story this week. The NFL, following President Trump's advice and changing its policy on players who want to protest by kneeling during the national anthem. They've been protesting, as we know, the use of force by police against African-Americans. And now the NFL says players cannot kneel on the field during the anthem. They can stay in the locker room if they want to. Trump says maybe they should leave the country if they don't want to stand for the anthem. And listen here to the coach of the NBA's Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr, who called the NFL's decision idiotic.
People in high places are trying to divide us. Divide loyalties, make this about the flag, as if the flag is something other than what it really is. It's a representation of what we're about, which is diversity, peaceful protest, right to free speech.
He says there that the flag is about diversity, peaceful protest, right to free speech. Jose, your thoughts on what the NFL did and the reaction to it?
Boy, look, I think that protest is such a fundamental part of what the freedom that is America. But, you know, I mean, the NFL and is a private organization. I guess they could tell their employees what to do. And if they don't, they could pay a price. I'm troubled by the president saying that those players, you know, shouldn't be in America, in the United States of America. I mean, that's troubling to me. And quite frankly, I think that's confusing to think that someone could think that because you protest or act incorrectly in your view, mm-hmm. that person shouldn't be in the country when they're American citizens.
Chad, how is this playing
impact
Capitol Hill?
Booker, yeah. The Democratic senator from New Jersey, who spoke up on this to Fox a couple of days ago, he said it seems like to him that the NFL is really undermining the very values that they profess to be protecting. He said our flag stands for something. It stands for the First Amendment, and this is his word, an affront to the ideals that we hold dear. You know, there's been a couple of times where we've had issues about sports teams getting involved in politics, and I think of several years ago when President Obama was in the Oval Office and Tim Thomas was the goaltender for the Boston Bruins, who had won the Stanley Cup, and he just wasn't a fan of President Obama, and he didn't want to go to the White House. Teams usually act as a team. They go to practice together. They take meals together. They eat together. They train together. And I suspect as we get closer to the start of the season, you know, they gave teams an out here. Said, you know, you can stand on the field or you can stay in the locker room. I bet dollars to donuts that you will have teams that stay completely in the locker room if this policy holds because you do things as a team in professional sports.
Hmm. Well, let's move on to the Russia investigation. Did we learn anything from meetings that initially only Republicans were invited to, that those meetings to see classified information in the FBI's Russia investigation, including whether or not there was a government informant or, you know, the president has a different word for it in the Trump campaign? I mean, Jose, what's your first thought there?
My first thought is that they go to classified meetings, come out of classified meetings and say the same things they said before they went in. It's so divided. It doesn't seem to me that there's any possibility of Democrats and Republicans agreeing on even what the information they're seeing, if it's enough, I don't know. Chad, do you see any possibility of, regardless of the information they see, whether some of it's redacted or not, that they could agree that what they're seeing, you know, both sides could agree on what they're seeing?
Well, this is the question that I have. It is unclear in the Gang of Eight, as we call them, the meetings that have the four leaders, the top leaders from the House and the Senate, plus the chairs and ranking Democrats of the Intelligence Committee, so eight people who went to these meetings yesterday. It's unclear if they saw documents and evidence or if they were just briefed. And to me, that's important because if you're actually putting pieces of paper in front of people, then they might be, you know, looking at something that's concrete. If they're being briefed, and we don't know how this went down in those sessions yesterday,
right.
And I stood outside, you know, the meeting here at the Capitol on the Senate side of the building, you know, for a couple of hours, and we didn't learn a darn thing after they came out. Adam Schiff, the Democrat from the House Intelligence Committee, the top Democrat there, was the only one who commented. Nobody wanted to talk. In fact, I chased Nancy Pelosi down the hall, and she said, you got to talk to Adam. And they kind of deputized him to come out and talk to the press. And he said, quote, nothing has changed our view that there is any evidence to support any allegation that the FBI or any intelligence agency placed a, quote, spy in the Trump campaign. That's the only thing that anybody has heard. Now, we are on the eve of a holiday weekend, and usually leaks come out. We could start to have a sieve here in just a couple of hours. I don't know.
I want to ask one more thing. We've just got about a minute left here, but there's a question about whether there's going to be a compromise on immigration soon. Jose, what's your thought on that?
Boy, this discharge petition that Congressman Corbello and others in the Republican group have been pushing seems to be getting stronger and stronger. I think that when Congress does convene, that they better – it looks as though they're going to have a meeting by the 7th of June, right, the House, to try to revert this discharge petition. But it just seems as that there's no other way, maybe.
They are up to 213 signatures. You need 218.
They need 218.
Yeah, and the question is, who is going to be number 218? Right. Now, there's some calendar issues that come into play here. They kind of have to have this wrapped up by June 11th because the day that this discharge petition would be eligible is toward the end of June. And if you don't have those signatures by the 11th, that's it.
So,
and there is a byproduct.
Yep.
The Farm Bill.
Right.
The Freedom Caucus took the Farm Bill
hostage,
and they will shoot that hostage if nothing has worked out on immigration by that time.
Chad Pergerman, Jose Diaz-Balart, thank you very much.